Welcome to the next part of Philosophy of Astrology. The original inspiration for this class was a kind of a survey class of the different stages of astrological history and what the, let's say, social and psychic and spiritual approach to astrology was at that time. And so, for example, I was planning to go through the Greek astrology approach and then consider how that morphed in later times, Ptolemaic times, and then maybe to consider Vedic astrology, and then we go into medieval astrology, and then there is Elizabethan astrology as encoded by William Lilly in the book Christian Astrology. And then we kind of next pick up the thread with astrology of the spiritual movement, which coincides with the discovery of Neptune. I don't have the year of that discovery written down, but I think it's 1846. Hold on here. Let me check that. Discovery of Neptune, 1846, September 23rd, 1846. And so the discovery of Neptune comes in parallel with a spiritual approach to astrology, which might be seen as part of sideshow, table thumping, and then leads into a more serious reflection in the late 19th century with the Theosophical movement. Throughout this, astrology is also being used in almanacs for planting. Poor Richard's Almanac by Ben Franklin lists the schedule for the Ulster County Court across the street from my house, and also when the time to plant is, and this is based on the moon and other things. So then we get into, once we get past spiritual astrology and the influence of the Theosophical movement, this dovetails into psychological astrology. And psychological astrology seems to start around the discovery of the planet Pluto, which could be seen as the planet of psychology, and in particular depth psychology, looking at deep unconscious and of motives and that kind of thing. And spiritual astrology is kind of brewing along, and astrology is taken, I think, more in mystical terms all the way through the first half of the 20th century. I think it's considered a branch of esotericism. And then I have in my hands this book by Dane Rudyar called An Astrology Study of Psychological Complexes and Emotional Problems, first edition, published in December 1966. And by the way, I do love artifacts. I guess I'm holding a second edition printed in 1969 by Servier in Wassenaar and then in Netherlands. This is one of the early, if not the first, works of psychological astrology. And so it is Dane Rudyar, of all people, who comes up with this concept of psychological astrology. And as I mentioned a few times, astrology almost always reflects the culture and the values which surround it. And so if you're interested in how a culture thought at a particular time, you can look up the astrology of that particular time and learn something about that. Of course, there's other bellwethers of culture, but one of them is the astrology, because astrology is in a sense a condensation of beliefs and cultural phenomena at any given time in history. And so the time in history that we have lived through involves a lot of talk about psychology and of unconscious motives. And of course, astrology was on to an understanding of the facets of the psyche and all that, but long before the discovery of Pluto. But I don't know exactly what a natal chart reading would have entailed, say, long before that, except to say that it would be concerned largely with practical matters of health, success in business, and inheritance, and love, and who are you going to marry? It's like a lot of the same questions come up over and over again. And it's not until really the time of Lily that any more, let's say, sophisticated astrology is available to the public. The lords and ladies were always having their fates read by court soothsayers, who included astrologers, and astrology has been used for military purposes for many years. That was the theme of Robert Hand's PhD thesis, by the way. However, in our time, speaking of Rob, we think of astrology largely as a psychological tool. As Rob said to me in a conversation recently, well, a couple of years ago, he said, all modern astrology is psychological astrology. Now, this is exemplified in, for example, the work of Liz Green and Howard Sasportis, which is all about motives and psychological analysis and all of this stuff. And I am not especially keen on using astrology for this purpose, to analyze psychological motives. With the advent, and it's obviously dangerous to analyze the motives of anyone because you're probably going to be wrong, and it's very difficult for us to understand our own motives, and much of astrology is the most of psychology as we think of it involves motives. And I want to caution you and everyone against using astrology in this way. And yet it is not easy to not use astrology in this way, because we know of so little else. Now, among the little else that we do know is, I believe, as I mentioned in a previous recording, three guys named Robert, Rob Zoller, Rob Hand, and Rob Schmidt founded this thing called Project Hindsight in approximately 1993. I was at the third conference. I think that was in 1996. And so what that was, and, well, and it no longer really remains, only Rob Hand is still alive, is a, and he's not the owner of Project Hindsight. Schmidt took over that, is the ancient texts, all the way back to the beginning of Greek astrology, and then from other cultures, Hebrew and Arabic and so forth, being translated and brought into the English language, and then being made available in inexpensive editions, most of them monographs, which served to give us concepts of astrology that were not psychological concepts. Now, I think that part of this is a retrieval of digital. So media all have a number of things that they do, and anything can be analyzed for a number of different properties that it has. But one of them is what it retrieves, and digital, not merely through the scanning of old books, but rather through something that it provokes in consciousness, tends to revive old things. And so it is interesting to note that Project Hindsight is getting going just as digital is making its way into the mainstream. Remember that when Project Hindsight begins in 1993, there are very, very few people on the internet. There are some people on CompuServe and some people on AOL, but it's largely kind of a hobby thing. But it is still digital technology reaching into the mainstream and coming into people's homes. At that time, Project Hindsight begins and begins retrieving and translating these texts. And what was interesting, that at that time, centaurs were, particularly Chiron was the only known well, the only named centaur in 1993. But Pholus had been discovered and was not named, and Nessus had been discovered and was not named, and then Cariclo is discovered, and Aspolus is discovered. So by 1995, there's five known centaurs and Project Hindsight. And astrology is in many ways splitting in two at this time. The people with more of the psychological leanings are looking into Chiron and the centaurs, but that too splits in that there's a kind of a contingent, and they blend a little bit, a contingent looking at the psychological aspects of astrology, but then there's one specifically looking at the healing aspects of astrology. And so, for example, in a book like Chiron and the Healing Journey, we do get an element of psychological astrology, but we also get a much more expansive concept of healing related to astrology. There is suddenly introduced a purpose to the psychological process, which is about healing instead of the analysis of motives. And then this, I think, starts to develop, and then Project Hindsight stuff hits the young generation pretty hard, and instead of developing the new planets, mainstream astrology pretty much all drags itself in the direction of the old stuff, Greek astrology and medieval astrology. And so it is surprising how few young people have any aptitude or even serious awareness of the newer discoveries. And I also view the newer discoveries, of which there are now 750,000 known planets orbiting our sun. This number's obviously increased. That was the tally a few years ago. But we're getting close to a million known orbiting bodies, which include planets, asteroids, by which I mean named and or numbered asteroids, asteroids in the main belt, asteroids in the Trojan belt by Pluto, and then centaurs and many weird things like Damocloids, which are kind of come through the inner solar system, points like Icarus, which spends most of its, I believe Icarus is the one that spends most of its time in Aquarius. Then we get into Kuiper Belt discoveries, because in 1992, right before Project Hindsight, the discovery of 1992 QB1 happens, and proves that there's a Kuiper Belt. And so in 1992, right at the inception of Project Hindsight, is the discovery of 1992 QB1, also the second centaur discovered in 1992, Pholus. And so just as the solar system is both expanding and also developing on the interior with centaurs, which are not strictly outer planets. Most of them are a hybrid of inner and outer, in that many of them come inside of Saturn's orbit and then go out pretty far, sometimes out past Uranus or Neptune, and then finally come back in to the solar system years later. That there is this radical expansion and cultivation of astrology, of astronomy happening, which is then being picked up by certain astrologers, and then at the simultaneously Greek, classical, medieval, and so forth are becoming a thing. And of the two, if you go to any astrology conference, you're going to find at times absolutely no discussion of the new planets. I'm sure Eris changed that a bit. I haven't been to an astrology conference in quite a while, and I'm not really that interested. But Eris introduces the new discoveries, but it took until, just for example, 2006 for most people to realize that there was anything beyond Pluto, 2006, right? And the first discovery of something beyond Pluto, and by that I mean in our solar system, not orbiting another star, but in our solar system orbiting our sun. The first discovery was 1992, and it's a decade and a half until anyone finds out there's anything in the solar system beyond Pluto. And this becomes a political thing because Mike Brown, the discoverer of Eris and a number of other points, has to make his mark on astrology and astronomy, really, by having Pluto declassified as a planet made into a dwarf planet. Mind you, there were no photos of Pluto at this time. There were just blotchy smudges. And the definition of planet that was devised under this highly political and I think a manipulated and suspicious thing of declassifying Pluto as a planet, making Ceres into a dwarf planet, and making Eris into a dwarf planet, wholly political in nature, was mostly made so that Mike Brown could make his mark on astronomy and like be remembered forever as the guy who demoted Pluto. Sad to say. I mean, and you know, Mike Brown has been helpful, and I've encountered him on a number of occasions and corresponded with him and so forth. But there's a little ego in that. And the definition of planet that was come up with for the first time, nobody ever defined planet except that it means wanderer in Greek, is that the thing must have cleared its path. And of course, If Neptune had cleared its path, Pluto wouldn't exist because Pluto crosses over the path of Neptune. So those of us who are following this were laughing, and this is just another example of science being full of shit and making arbitrary distinctions rather than spiritually meaningful distinctions or scientifically meaningful distinctions, more apropos. And so the upshot here is that astrology is really heading in two directions at the beginning of the 1990s. It's heading in the direction of the new discoveries on one hand, and it was very exciting to be involved in astrology. I don't pick up on astrology till 1994, and I was very quickly turned on to a book by Barbara Hand Clough about Chiron, and then soon after that introduced to Melanie Reinhart. And all of these new discoveries, which it was, clear by the late 90s that there were a number of other centaur planets in existence. And then points like Sedna being discovered and other things in the Kuiper Belt are being discovered. And there's a lot of buzz and activity about that. But the thing that really kind of wages the revolution, and I don't know if Rob intended this, but it's a kind of a retro revolution, is classical astrology. And so I would say that the last time there was any real excitement about the discovery of a new planet was something like Varuna in 2000 and Sedna in 2002. And then it seems like hardly anybody cares. And then there's a big brouhaha about Eris in 2006. And a bunch of people jump in who have not given a toss about the minor planets, and suddenly they're experts at the minor planets, right? Other people, yourself and the Planet Waves team included, are involved in the rather intricate and sensitive and laborious process of delineating a new planet, by which I mean people like Philip Sedgwick and Melanie Reinhart, Juan Revilla. Check him out if you can. I hope some of his stuff is still posted. He's a Costa Rican anthroposophic teacher of some kind who did centaur astrology for many years and gave us some of the best delineations of centaurs. But this goes out of style really, really fast. And by the mid-2000s, you're not, except for Eris, which is kind of a big flash in the pan, you're not hearing anything about Chiron or centaurs or new planets. And All that is the rage, and having the influence on astrology, or supposedly thinking it's having the influence because so many people are involved, especially young people, is all this classical and medieval stuff. Now, I personally was very fortunate that the moment I began my astrological studies, I put an ad in the Village Voice because I was working for the Jackie Sloan Psychic Circle and was quite successful at it, and then became a manager of a psychic line. Like, I kind of spun off a new psychic line, which is what they call them, and I needed to hire people, and I put an ad in the Village Voice, and from that ad came somebody named David Arner, who lives right up here in Port Ewan, a few miles away from me, and David was hip to Project Hindsight. David knew Rob Hand personally and had attended all the Project Hindsight conferences, and so I am very fortunate that right around the same time that I met Melanie Reinhart and Barbara Hand Clough and started reading their books, I was also introduced to classical astrology by David Arner and introduced to Project Hindsight. And David taught me an approach to morphing, like using both responsibly. You see me doing it in my work now. You'll always see me, for example, honoring the classical rulers. I will always talk about Jupiter as the primary ruler of Pisces, and I'll say things like, well, Neptune doesn't really rule a sign. Modern planets don't really rule signs, but Neptune's got a strong association with Pisces. We can't deny that, and many similar principles. So let's call it a secondary ruler. But what David Arner taught me was to always check the classical planets first. And he also taught me to be able to see the similarities in, for example, a seven-planet chart with only the classical planets, the lights in the sky, which are visible, and a modern chart when you add Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, and Chiron, and I would say Eris as the modern planets, and then a chart with full-on complement of asteroids and other TNOs added. Say there's three basic levels of the chart, right? There's the ancient chart with seven that would be used in Vedic astrology. Then there's the modern chart where you add the planets that are most known. Again, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, Chiron, and Eris. And then there would be the full-on asteroid chart. And as an exercise, I could see doing this as kind of a one day at Omega Institute, looking at, or we can do it here if anybody's interested. That's a question. You are, thank you. Is to look at the way that these charts all say same thing in different ways, and also to notice what is being added from one version of the chart to the next. What do you see in the chart when you add? When you add modern planets, again, the modern planets I'm calling Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, Chiron, Eris, and then what do you see when you start adding in asteroids and other centaurs and trans-Neptunian objects and so forth? How does that change the framework? And I think that this is a very important discussion for astrology to be having, is how does this change the framework? That all said, I can see the popularity of classical astrology because it does take us out of the psychological astrology framework. But the problem with it is it starts to bring back things like fate and was this meant to be, and all these concepts that seem more medieval than they do Greek. And where people think that they are destined to be a certain way or have a certain experience because certain things are a certain way in their charts. And the beauty of psychological astrology, as Rudyard explains it, not the psychological astrology personally, just saying, as I think it kind of degrades under the influence of people like Seth Bordas and Liz Green, because I think a lot of those books should come with a free razor blade to cut your wrists, because that's really how you feel after reading some of them, where you just feel doomed, again, to be a certain way. It's almost like adding a psychology to fate. And I think there's a much better way to do this work, which I'm doing my best to convey in this series of classes. At its outset, psychological astrology was pretty cool. Let's hear from the roots. Again, a 1966 book. I'm 57. This book comes out in 66. It's 55 years old. Okay, 55 years old. I'm going to read you some samples, and I can scan some of this and get it up, since I'm sure this is an extremely rare book, and I do love these artifacts just for this reasons. Let's read the foreword. In this book, even more perhaps than in previous ones, I've attempted to integrate closely a modern kind of psychology and astrology. The discussion of psychological complexes and emotional problems proceeds fundamentally at the level of psychological study of the whole person. And I believe it can bring to the reader interested in a fuller understanding of his and others' character valuable new insights, regardless of whether or not he is a student of astrology. Yet astrology plays an essential part in the discussion and in this analysis of the causes and the meaning of psychological frustrations, tensions, and blockages, as much as it provides a structural frame of reference for enabling us to establish, as it were, a map of the psychic life of the individual involved. Now, in that, you know, there you can see, you can count off the presumptions that are being made. As open-minded as this is, you know, all astrology proceeds from presumptions that tend to be true in its era, in particular. Hold on, I'm going to adjust the microphone so I can look down on this page and not have to kind of crane my neck and hold the book up in my face. Astrology provides the structure, psychology of the contents in this astro-psychological study. Okay. of human beings under conditions of stress and strain, as well as in more basically harmonious situations. And as I've often stated, these two factors, structure and contents, are needed in any thought-inclusive study of a form and existence, be it biological, philosophical, social, or even cosmic. Yeah, this is a good idea to really separate out form from content. And by the way, I have little doubt that Rudyard read Marshall McLuhan at the time, because a lot of smart people were reading Marshall McLuhan, and Rudyard was one of the smart people of that time. So I'm going to speculate here, but I can't imagine that Dane Rudyard did not read Understanding Media when it came out in 1964. The pairing of the planets Saturn and Mars, Jupiter and Mercury, Venus and Mars is part of an astrological tradition of probably great antiquity. Yeah, it goes back to the 4th century BC, but the significance of such a pairing is usually not fully understood. The pairing has usually been related to the basic functions inherent in every living organism or even in any steady self-perpetuating system of social organization. Such a relationship is discussed in the second chapter of this book, and a fourth pair of planets, Uranus and Neptune, is added to correspond to a drive particularly intense in human beings, but also existing in other forms of life, the drive for self-transformation and transcendence. Okay. This is an essential urge, presumably expressing itself at the biological level as mutations, but becoming in man the great Promethean desire for ever widening horizons, for the conquest of higher levels of existence, for becoming a more than man and reaching superhuman or ultrahuman states of consciousness, for becoming godlike. Hold that thought. You know, Rick Tarnas is often credited with the association of Uranus with the Promethean archetype. Good book called Prometheus the Awakener by Rick Tarnas. Very, very good book. If you ever thought you wanted to read Cosmos and Psyche by Rick Tarnas, but were put off by the fact that it's about 700 pages, try reading Prometheus the Awakener. It's only 100 much smaller pages, and it's super cool and easy to read. Costs a lot, like $20, but still, maybe you can find a PDF. But get the book and collect books. I would strongly recommend collecting books, okay? Just saying. All right. What the esotericist calls the path is a way of self-transformation and self-understanding. This way can easily be shown to include three fundamental states, stages represented in astrological symbolism by Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, with perhaps a fourth one referred to, an as yet unknown planet, the probable existence of which I've discussed many years ago, tentatively naming the planet Proserpine. But notice, wait, pause, hold on. He is not talking about Pluto. What's going on here? He's writing about psychological astrology. It's 1966. Pluto was discovered 36 years earlier. I feel like knocking my head on this microphone. And he's not mentioning Pluto, which is kind of the thing he's getting at here. The study of these trans-Saturnian planets, not included in the traditional system of astrology, which we inherited from the Greeks and the Chaldeans, would take several chapters, would have greatly lengthened this book. Very polite of him to write short books, too. For this reason, I made only succinct reference to such planets, namely reserving a full discussion of their meaning for a subsequent volume. As it stands now, I hope this book will bring to its readers a vivid realization of the close interdependence that can exist between a psychology able to cope with the total structure of the human personality and an astrology intent on revealing such a structure in contemporary psychological terms of being occupied almost exclusively with the superficialities of everyday existence and the forecasting of events, right? So astrology's kind of got its head up its ass with, like, predicting things and forecasting events, and people still, you know, will call up astrologers on New Year's and say, you know, the Associated Press or somebody will call up and say, what do you predict for 2022? It's like, and everyone's looking for predictions, predictions, predictions. Well, this starts to even, and by the way, in the mind of popular culture, that's still what you do with astrology. But astrologers think that they're psychologists mostly, but they still think they're Nostradamus also. So there's a lot of identity problems in astrology. And the whole godlike thing is problematic because astrologers are not omniscient, and a lot of them like to think they are. Okay, so continuing to the conclusion of the foreword, astrology and psychology, however, can be of mutual benefit to each other only if it's clearly understood that astrological thinking is radically different from the rigorous intellectual thinking and empirical methods featured in modern science. And psychology still had something going for it in the 1960s. Science proceeds by way of exclusion, dealing only with characteristics common to large groups. Astrology proceeds by way of inclusion, relating every phenomena of life to a few fundamental principles considered to be universally valid. I'm not sure how I feel about this. I haven't done a full analysis, but this is what he is saying. And it's worth contemplating this stuff carefully. So I'm going to read that again. Again, I'm not endorsing the validity of this theory, but I think that that it's he's saying something here that I'd like to figure out the implications of. And remember, he's also making he's operating under the assumption that psychology is a science and proceeds with the use of the scientific method, or with at least the sincere documenting of phenomena, and is self-critical. And frankly, I have not seen astrology live up to that any time recently. Okay. Astrology and philosophy, however, can be of mutual benefit to one another only if it is clearly understood that astrological thinking is radically different from the rigorous intellectual thinking and empirical methods featured in modern science. Astrology proceeds by way of exclusion, dealing only with characteristics common to large groups. Astrology proceeds by way of inclusion, relating every phenomena of life to a few fundamental principles considered to be universally valid. The astrological planets, including the sun and moon, are symbolic expressions of such principles which operate at several levels of existence and which refer to nothing in particular but to functions common to every organized system. And the planets do change in meaning quite a bit. This is the thing. Venus can represent a man. Mars can represent a woman. Things like this can happen in horary all the time. And so there's all this shape-shifting going on. And by the way, what Rudyard is not saying here is that astrology is a phenomenon of consciousness. Right? The epistemological question is lurking at the bottom of all of this. How do we know what we think we know? How does any of this get any meaning at all? We give it the meaning that it has, or maybe there is some deeper level of meaning that is inherent in something like Jupiter, and we get it, we receive it in some way, but we don't know that. And I think that to do astrology honestly, it's vitally important that you be knowing when you are projecting and knowing when you are receiving and knowing when you are synthesizing an observation or an insight and when you are essentially recycling something that you read. I cannot discuss here, he concludes, this approach any further, this approach, which I have outlined in my books, The Astrology of Personality in 36 and The Practice of Astrology in 1968, this must be a foreword written later, and in many magazine articles. And by the way, this was a time, this is in the 60s, there was a lot of interest in astrology in evolving and more sophisticated context than the absolute pabulum that we get today in 99% of astrology websites. And right now, astrology is almost entirely under the thrall of digital, essentially rendering it meaningless. But at the same time, astrology is one of the things that is able to work with chaos theory and the chaotic nature of life that can meekly represent life with any real elegance, right? Is a very elegant system when it is used in a flowing and non-absolutist way, in a non-arbitrary way. Astrology, creates many problems for itself by attempting to be rigid and attempting to think that this means this and that means that. Okay. Concluding again, the substance of this volume was found in a series of articles, 1947, in a magazine which has long since been discontinued, World Astrology. Wow, this is a compilation of articles from the late 1940s. Whoo! It's 19 years old. So he is involved in psychological astrology in the 1940s. I mean, there's plenty of psychology and psychiatry happening at that time, and much more interesting than our times, where psychology has basically just been militarized. So World Astrology has been discontinued and these appeared there. The material has been greatly revised and added to, and I hope it will give the student of both psychology and astrology a broader and more structured understanding of the personal and social problems which have become so widespread and crucial in the conditions of modern living. Okay, so this is the introduction of an astrological study of psychological complexes and emotional problems. And just to reiterate, Rudyard is coming in on in the wake of the mystical theosophical approach to astrology of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, where it's considered a profoundly esoteric topic and verging on a little bit spooky, and then it is elaborated on and somehow this reputation is developed as the Theosophical movement picks up on astrology, and then its main astrological writer is Alice A. Bailey, who publishes Esoteric Astrology in 1950, I believe, the very end of her life, but for many years was friends with Dane Rudyar. So it is Bailey who encouraged Rudyar to write the book, The Astrology of Personality. I actually have in my possession the copy of that book that Rudyar gave to Bailey and signed to her, called A Presentation Copy. You know, to Alice, thank you for asking me to write this book. Here's your copy. And then she signs it in pencil with her big Alice A. Bailey signature on the inside front cover. And then somehow, that was in the 30s or 40s, and so somehow around 2004 or so, this book ends up in my hands, thanks to the Rosendale Public Library, which got it and called me up and said, you need this. Make any donation and you can have it. So I wrote a good check thanking them for it. So I know from a lot of things, including a copy of this book, that that Bailey asked Rudyar to write the book Astrology of Personality, and Rudyar really is the founder of psychological astrology, no question about it. And so he is steeped in the theosophical approach that Bailey is using. So he has clearly read Bailey, no question about it. And I believe it was Mark Jones. Well, there's a lot of overlap between the Theosophical movement and astrologers, and then it starts to become psychological astrology. Mark, the Reverend Dr. Mark Edmund Jones, just to give you an idea of that particular lineage, is coming out of this spiritual movement of astrology, not strictly a theosophical, but again, I'm sure fully connected, well-read in the field, because that was what was going on. And he channels the Sabian symbols. He and Elsie Wheeler channeled the Sabian symbols, I think, in the 1920s. And then Rudyar revises them and publishes the volume we currently know, which is now out of print. If you see it, buy it. It's going for $200 someplace. It's called An Astrological Mandala. He rewrites that. And so it would be absolutely fascinating to map out all of these interrelationships. I have kind of a mind map, but it's as you're hearing, it's a little sketchy without exact dates and times given. And such an article may have been written. In preparation for this discussion, I had one of my email chats with Melanie Reinhart, and it was she who, you know, pointed me to, you know, understand Rudyar is really, you know, the genesis point of psychological astrology as a thing. And then I look on my shelf, and I've got this book here. I have a lot of books I didn't buy because people sent them to me, and then my teacher, David Rell, a different teacher, one of my very, very good teachers, passed away at some point around 2012, and I bought a bunch of his books, and I was given a bunch of his books by his widow, and so my astrology collection has been infused by all of these books that I haven't read, but I have, and I'm becoming a kind of a repository for astrology books, and I'm open to anyone coming here, anyone sane and calm and loving, coming here and sitting in my office and rummaging the shelves and finding stuff and you know, studying here if you're in the area. So keeping that in mind. Okay, so that is sort of my introduction of one thing where spiritual astrology becomes psychological astrology, and then also the split where psychological astrology splits into kind of healing-oriented astrology based in the centaurs, and then goes further into the psychological realm. That's going on right around the same time that Project Hindsight is being introduced, and suddenly kind of rewriting the timeline, traveling back in time 2,400 years to the origins of Greek astrology with Eudoxus of Cnidos and others, Hermes Trismegistus, and we end up in this state that we're in right now, where pretty much, as far as I can tell, in 2021, most, quote, serious astrology is heavily influenced by the old stuff, Greek and medieval. And the rest of it is a lot of garbage on the internet where there, you know, most of the rest. And then there's a few people who have maintained a tradition of some rigor. There's a few people really doing good work in terms of healing approaches to astrology. But though it's, you know, brought some good things into our lives, one of the things the internet has brought us is a time when anyone can put up a website and say, I'm an astrologer now, and people will believe them, and some of the stuff can be quite influential. So know where you are in place and time, and start to map out this history. And one of the ways to map it out is in the planets. You know, which planets were discovered when, and what a chart looked like in any given time of history, and what was going on at the time of the discovery of new planets. You know, for example, Uranus is the beginning of the age of electricity, and Neptune comes with a spiritual revival and also the Civil War, and then Pluto comes with a psychological approach taking hold, incredibly not mentioned once in the introduction by Rudyard. Incredible how long it took for Pluto to manifest in astrological consciousness. And then also, of course, with Pluto, part of why it's not takes so long is because it involves death, and Pluto was discovered in 1930, just as the rise of fascism in Europe is happening, and so there is a historical connection between Pluto and the rise of fascism, and then psychological astrology. So lots going on here. It's a busy place. But as I said, either in this recording or the previous one, the one thing you need to know anytime you've got a chart in front of you is, what am I doing with this? What do I want to find out? That is going to guide everything. What do I want to find out? What do I need to know? Why am I looking? Not about judging it. It's just about knowing. Good? Good. All right. I just sent out an email to the class. I will send out another one when I upload this, and then there'll be one more in this series. For now, astrology as divination. Stay tuned. I'd like to have that done soon and move on. Okay, good. Lots of love. Signing off on May 9, 5:13 p.m., Kingston, New York, first capital of New York State, previously called Wiltwyck, when the Dutch had it. Bye for now.